So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Revolver
and funk you, Tommy Dreamer, you filthy, stinking pile of shit. That's what you is. It's a filthy, stinking pile of shit. Let me tell you about Tommy Dreamer. 6 years ago, he crawled into me on his knees, and he said to me, he said, my daddy's a crackhead. My mother's a whore. I need somebody to be at my side. I need somebody to love me. I need a minner. I need a daddy. And I looked down at him and I said, I will be your daddy, son. And just like him. And he promised me that he would call me in a time of need at any time. Three weeks, I've been waiting for this puke-faced son of a bitch to call me because I wanted to do a double flip off the top rope for you fans. I practice it, a double flip off the top rope. But you son of a bitch. You piece of shit. I love you.
I love you too. You didn't want to do this more. You want to have a lighter schedule. That's fine. You didn't want to be here, bro. I'm no disrespect to you. You know, this is what you wanted. I've given you what you wanted.
You've given me what I've wanted. You are nothing but a big ass with a big ego. I ought to slap you now, just like I'd slap my daughters, just like I'd slap my wife, just like I would slap anybody else in my family. You stay away from me, you son of a bitch. You're a total asshole. You're a asshole. A complete and utter big asshole. And I should have realized it a long time ago. You son of a bitch!
You wanna go? You wanna go? I'll fucking turn my back on you, but I'll never fucking hit you!
I remember when you and I were friends, the games we used to play. Remember?
It's time for Review Away. John Pollock here alongside Wei Chung Ting.
That's my full name.
How are you, Wei?
John William Pollock.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. Very exciting show today, as they are every single week. I love to sit down, Wei, and just go to a random year with you as we travel back to the glory days of yesteryear.
Why don't we go to, like, 1785 next?
I don't know if it's on YouTube.
Or maybe 20 BC.
Some of those biblical fights, I'm sure, were worked.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. They were fighting the lions and teaching them high spots. And
yeah.
Sounds like some, like, one FC show, like Roar of Tigers.
Would they have, I'm sure pro wrestling in its current form is probably, you know, quite recent, but I'm sure there were staged fights.
Oh, absolutely.
All throughout civilization.
Sure, you go back to the early days of pancreation. I'm sure there were worked fights.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, listen, why are we both going to kill each other? These fools don't know the difference.
Exactly.
Let's make this one entertaining.
Let's practice this and just try to make it look good, okay? Just like, they wouldn't call it selling. They'd call it
I think,
barter.
You know what you and I should do? You and I should enter a jiu-jitsu tournament.
And work
and
a
draw
match?
Each other.
Okay.
Wait, how do you... Do you know your opponent ahead of time when you've entered, or is it a random draw the day of?
You typically know. For local tournaments, at least, they'll tell you who your opponents are probably the week of.
That would be a lot of fun, and you and I work. I'd put you over 100%.
No, you don't have to do that.
And then we'd make it really entertaining, and then you end with the with that Kimura into that flip into the armbar, and then I'd do the rallying cry of trying to get everyone to cheer, and then I'd
you know we wouldn't do that. We would have a straight-on pro wrestling match.
Body slam me.
Yeah, we just, like, stomp and kick each other.
Hurricane Rana.
Stone Cold Stunners. And just make a total mockery.
I don't think it would make a mockery. I think it would be a lot of fun.
It would be hilarious. We should do that.
Maybe that should be our anniversary show next year, is you and I work a match together. Okay. Work a no-gi match together.
Or an actual pro wrestling match, I think, would be more fun.
I think let's like compromise. Make it like a UWFI-style fight.
That would be fun.
Where it's the foundation is mixed martial arts, but we'll have some fun. Like what Josh Barnett did with his buddy.
Some kicks. We'll throw in kicks, at least.
Yeah. Some working kicks. I hope you wouldn't just like head kick me out of nowhere.
That sounds fun. That sounds like something I'd like to do. How about that? Is that footage of CM Punk rolling? Or
Gracie Breakdown this week. How amazing is it that the Gracie Breakdown was like significantly longer than the actual fight? It's a 17-minute video.
They like to talk this.
We should explain. This was the finish from Friday night's Fight Night card where Luke Rockhold hit Michael Bisping with a head kick and then, instead of just following up with strikes, he immediately went for a one-arm guillotine and submitted Michael Bisping. Did you watch this fight?
No, I didn't.
Very good card, actually. One of the best UFC cards of the year, I think. But that finish, a one-arm guillotine, pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, very impressive.
I mean, that's the same. Uriah Faber, the first Dominic Cruz fight, he submitted Dominic Cruz with a one-arm guillotine. But very, very difficult to pull off that submission.
And, of course, the Gracie brothers from... was it Huron and Henner?
Yes.
They did a breakdown and had CM Punk as their guest.
Yes.
And at the beginning of this video, which you can find on YouTube, I don't have to... Why am I plugging the Gracie?
And giving them a nice courtesy?
Anyway, CM Punk, if you want to know what he's been up to in his spare time, quite obviously doing a lot of jiu-jitsu.
Because he
was demonstrating a lot of his technique, and I thought he looked pretty good.
I think he needs to come up to open mat for a seminar, maybe.
To teach a seminar?
Probably to participate in one, but actually, if he taught one, he would probably do much better than most teachers in any jiu-jitsu school.
Well, what do you mean?
CM Punk teaching a seminar? Do you know how many nuts you would have show up that are suddenly jiu-jitsu practitioners?
Oh, you mean in terms of attendance?
Oh, yeah. I'm talking about attendance.
Sure.
What belt does he have?
I believe he's still white.
A white belt?
Yeah.
And, wow, look at that. You are ahead of CM Punk.
Well, that does not mean anything. He'd destroy, I think, most people. He's just out of physical ability.
You don't know that.
Maybe. I don't know. But he looked very technical. And he seems like the guy who says he's not a belt chaser. And I don't know. Maybe he even requests.
What does that mean? I'm not a belt chaser. I'm not interested in improvement? I'm not interested in learning?
I think it's a rank
of progress.
Right, you're right. But when people say that, they just mean it's not really necessarily a goal to reach a certain color belt. It's more so a general goal of just getting better overall.
Well, then that's my story, too. I'm not a belt chaser.
Sure. Nice.
I want to learn the philosophy behind
it all. You're just like CM Punk.
Yes.
What?
Nothing. I'm trying to contemplate right now.
Like CM Punk?
A deeper philosophy when it comes to jiu-jitsu.
Okay.
Everyone's getting mad right now. The ECW fans, I don't know how many of them are jiu-jitsu fanatics that want to hear about this. November to remember.
I've already forgotten it.
I wish I could. You and I last week debated which we were going to do, 97, 98. I think we went between three events. And I swear away, I sat down and was all set to watch the 97 version. And thank God, I was like, I can't remember which one we picked. And it was like this amazing revelation. I was like, oh, wait a minute. I can listen back to the end of the podcast because we do record these conversations. So I went back and I was like, thank God I listened. I was about to watch the whole 97 because we talked about the flag match between Tommy Dreamer and Rob Van Dam, and I had that in my head, and that was at the 97 show.
Why did we talk about that?
I think I was looking up the matches, and I mentioned there was a flag match. Why there was a flag match between two Americans, another question that will lead us one day to November to remember 97. But we, I guess, changed to 98, so thankfully I watched the right show.
I wasn't sure either, so like when I made the art, the graphic for the podcast, I wondered which one I was doing, and I was kind of like 70% prepared for you to let me know that it was wrong. And
Still waiting for the show where we show up and we've watched
different shows.
Wrong years.
Yeah, yeah. That'll happen. It'll happen eventually. We've been pretty good about it right now.
Amazingly, we have not screwed up the show we are to watch.
This is helpful, though, because you actually sent me a link. So
did you watch the whole network? The one I gave you?
Man, I bounce back and forth because...
Dude, the network, I hate it. Yeah. I officially hate the network. This past weekend, I watched two Fight Pass cards, and I watched November to Remember. On the Fight Pass, I think it stopped once, maybe twice. And that's for two Fight Pass cards. This network, it had to have frozen on me 30 times. And I'm talking like minutes at a time where I just had to shut it off out of frustration.
You know, if I don't touch it, if I don't touch anything, it would usually play fine. But it's when I have to skip back and forth and when I want to skip through, you know, an entrance or something. That's almost impossible to do sometimes.
I'm scared to move that. Mine, I started and I watched about an hour and it was fine.
And it just freezes?
And then it just started, boom. And once it started freezing, it did not stop. And I just had to turn it off and stop watching it. And eventually find an online version that... way more reliable. I don't have any of these crashing issues on any streaming service with Fight Pass, with Daily Motion, with anything. But the WWE Network, for whatever reason, it crashes like it's fucking Lindsay Lohan on a bender. It is brutal.
Oh.
Like, it's my biggest turnoff to the network is the constant crashing.
Yeah. Hmm. I find for the most part it works well for me. It's just... obviously, it's not as good as a YouTube or even a Daily Motion.
Why is that, though? I'm paying $10 for this a month. YouTube is free.
I don't know. I would just imagine that it's you know, maybe this technology for them, whatever software that they're using is maybe, I don't know, in somewhat of an infancy. Like, compared to Netflix, Netflix is even more, much more reliable than...
I don't think I've ever seen Netflix crash on me.
Right.
I don't believe so.
Well, and you're going to get various experiences from people to people, right, depending on your system and your setup. But I'll say the network for me, for the most part, is a bit of a chore to guide through.
This network, well, I don't know about it. And this was not the show to really test my patience level. So
yeah.
I had to break this up over quite a lot of sittings to finally get through. Sunday, November the 1st of 1998, New Orleans, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Very appropriate that you and I announce we're going to review this. And then the very next day, what does WWE do? They announce ECW Week on the network.
Yes, that's right.
They're doing ECW content all week long, including they just uploaded November to Remember 95.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Why? What's the significance? Of that.
It just wasn't up there before.
Wow.
So now
amazing.
Now you can remember all the November events.
Now you can.
How many remember jokes are we going to make throughout this show? I have plenty.
I wasn't planning on making any.
Oh.
So please.
Okay, well, I'll stop then.
No, you go ahead.
Let's start off with the show. New Orleans, the site of WrestleMania this year. A city you and I spent a week in.
A great city.
A beautiful city.
Yeah, a lot of fun. And amazing food.
You know what? I'm going to throw this out there because WrestleMania it's quickly coming up for next year in beautiful California, Santa Clara, Bay Area. We have not yet set up our plans for WrestleMania week, but I do want to gauge interest for those out there that are going to be attending WrestleMania this year or live in the area that would be interested in us doing another live review away show. It was my highlight of WrestleMania this past year. I would like to do it again. The issue is we have to find a place to do it. Ideally, it would be, I guess, close to or at the hotel we're staying at, but we have not booked one yet. So I'm reaching out there to you, the listener, that might know Santa Clara, or the Bay Area, and help us out a bit.
What if we did it in the parking lot?
At WrestleMania?
Yeah, like a tailgate thing.
you're allowed to do tailgating in the U.S. the afternoon of WrestleMania. That's that's not the worst backup plan in the world. I would be...
You just have to, like, rent some speakers, a generator, you know, table.
Yeah, it might be a little awkward, people just standing maybe around we'll in the parking lot, like, but they could drink.
Yeah, maybe we'll just have, like, cones and just shout into these cones.
Yeah, this could make for a tremendously listenable podcast.
Yeah.
Bunch of guys screaming in a parking lot.
We'll already have people there. We'll already have an audience.
Yeah. Well, maybe
but
that...
Gonna, but how many people are going to show up? I guess there are going to be a lot of people that will show up early.
The positive to that is we could probably attract some random people.
Right. But, you know...
We're looking for advice for people that know the area much more than myself and Wei.
And if you're an establishment, perhaps, that would like to...
We will plug the shit out of you on this particular podcast.
Yes, we will. Hello, Nike. Hello, Google.
I have sources that tell me the Holiday Inn chain. They were a little unstable for a few years, but after this past year's WrestleMania in New Orleans, that branch and that chain, I think they're here to stay.
Yeah, that brand, I think everybody knows it now.
The Holiday, it's in now.
But, okay. A lot of businesses out there. Twitter, Silicon Valley, Facebook. Hello, hey, Mark, if you're listening.
Listen, there's a very... We have a stranglehold when it comes to the wrestling podcast Asian demographic. I mean, you are it.
Wrestling podcast Asians. I'm trying to think who else there are. I don't know. I don't even know how many wrestling podcast people there are.
Yeah. Me, it's more of a bit of a dogfight when it comes to the white male that's part of a wrestling podcast.
Right. Yeah, but you're a whole, I'd say you're a whole thing onto yourself. You're a whole category onto yourself.
Oh, thank you.
You're very unique.
I'm in the John Pollock category.
Yeah, you're the only, actually, you're great.
I feel, though, you and I, we're kind of, I feel I'm somewhat, how would I best describe it? I'm like a weaker member of the horsemen, though. I'm
what?
I'm more strong because of my association.
No, you're Ric Flair.
Than on my own. Oh, absolutely not. No.
If you're not Ric Flair, then who is?
I would say I'm fine being, Tully. He was okay on his own. Decent run. Had the I Quit match. Good run.
If there's anybody who's Flair, I'd say you're Flair. I think I might be Tully, or I might be like, whatever.
We'll find out. Whoever gives their notice, and then all of a sudden a positive drug test for cocaine pops up as you try to go to the competitor.
Yeah, they'll be Tully.
Yes.
I think everybody wants to be Tully. I want to be Arn, actually.
Arn? From everyone I talk to that has ever worked with Arn, like, just a classic character.
Yeah.
Like that guy, like that duck quote. That, to me, symbolizes Arn Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We keep avoiding this. I'm going to give you a...
You're
going to
avoid it again?
At the end of this pay-per-view, I have a trivia question for you.
Ooh, nice.
And I'm going to see how well...
That has to do with this show?
Yes, that has to do with this show and some success.
All right.
Show started off with... Jack Victory being approached outside about his recent attack on New Jack. This was done in black and white. And Jack Victory is bragging about taking out New Jack. Apparently didn't do that good a job because then New Jack jumped him in the parking lot, yelling, "Come on, bitch," and beats up Jack Victory. And they handcuffed New Jack. This was identified as taking place earlier in the night, and thus New Jack was taken away. I guess that's all for New Jack tonight.
Yeah.
Gone.
A lot of Jacks.
Yeah, this was very confusing. Could you tell the two apart?
They look... different. So, yeah.
They cut to Joey Styles in the ring to open the show, and he runs through the card, and all of a sudden, Terry Funk comes through the crowd. And this was following his most recent WWF run, where he had come back earlier in 98 as Chainsaw Charlie, had then morphed into normal Terry Funk, and then announced in July or so that he was leaving the company again. And here he was, back in ECW, unannounced, and this was our show-long Terry Funk weaving of a story. Funk calls himself the living legend and the professor of Funk U, and refers to Joey Styles as, quote, an asshole, takes the microphone, continues to use the word asshole, says he did not get an invitation for tonight's show, so Funk U, and Funk U, Paulie dangerously, and then refers to his good pal and student, Tommy Dreamer, who is a stinky pile of shit. He says, 6 years ago, Tommy Dreamer crawled into me. Crawled into him. And explained that his Tommy Dreamer's dad was a crackhead and his mom was a whore. And agreed to be Tommy's daddy. And he expected that when Tommy Dreamer needed a surprise partner tonight, he would call Daddy. Because tonight, Daddy wanted to do a double back, double flip off the top rope.
Okay.
The double back, double flip. Something Ricochet might try. So Dreamer enters the ring and says he is met by Terry Funk's calling him a piece of shit. Tommy says, I love you. And Dreamer says the Funk simply wanted a lighter schedule, so he didn't call him. He's like, I didn't want to book you. You were on limited dates. Funk says he should slap Tommy Dreamer just like he slaps his daughters and slaps his wife.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's... I don't know if that would really fly.
I don't know if that was politically correct in 1998.
Yeah, I mean, it's also something you don't really want to say on camera in case it could ever be used against you as evidence.
Well, playing a character, I guess.
I guess.
Funk then leaves, and we go into the musical open. If you thought this was the end of Terry Funk tonight, you would be wrong. Terry Funk was going to put his stamp on this show and crawl into November to Remember.
Uh-huh.
So the show starts off with tag action. The Blue Meanie and Supernova, they're in the height of the Blue World Order, taking on Danny Doring and Roadkill. And immediately Joey Styles apologizes on behalf of Terry Funk. Funk returns from the back during this match with a cameraman. And then he goes after the timekeeper, tosses him away, and he installs himself as the new timekeeper for the match.
It's been a while since I've seen an ECW show, I feel. Actually, no, that's not true. Didn't we do one, like, last month?
I'll take your word for
it. I don't remember, but I just don't recall the rules, even in ECW, being this loose. Like, there was no respect for any type of rule at all. Anybody could just come in and, you know, don't need to hide anything in front of the ref. I mean, this guy could just come, whatever.
What did you think of the referees' uniforms on this show? They had shirts.
Yeah, they had these, like, I can't even explain.
Ugly.
Like, just 90s fashion. Like, I mean, like,
I don't know if these were ever fired of the fashion scene.
Like, blue and...
Like, it looked like you were walking into a sporting goods store, and this guy was here to assist you with what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Jim Molino.
They're like, black and yellow shards. Like
just
the white shirt.
The ugliest looking shirts imaginable.
Tommy Dreamer, he had like the Nike shirt with like this black stripe down the middle and a chain and what appeared to be like black satin pants.
Well, they weren't Twitter pants at least.
No.
What would 98 be like a phone, like dial up pants?
A pager.
instant messenger.
Yeah.
ICQ.
Yeah, ICQ.
Flower on it.
Number.
I think I still remember my ICQ number.
249-45539.
Jesus Christ. Mine was like 030-730. Oh, I can't remember.
Yeah, look me up, guys. ICQ.
Did you have a name? Did you have a nickname or just your regular name?
I had multiple names.
Wu Ting.
Yeah, that was one of them.
That was one. What were some others?
What was yours?
I was, I think I was just John Pollard.
Yeah,
I
don't, bullshit.
No, I'm not lying.
Bullshit.
I never.
Who the hell uses their real names?
I did on ICQ.
No, you're hiding something.
I'm not. I would believe me. I would tell you.
Tell me one of your screen names that you had back then.
I've used the same screen name forever.
Which is what?
It's just Johnny01A, which was my Yahoo ID. I needed to come up with a name, and I've just used that for like every screen name.
You never took the chance to come up with an alias. You never took the opportunity to be, you know, on the internet to just come up with a completely different persona.
I was not that person, Way.
All right. You weren't like, you know.
You know what my nickname should have been?
Bad guy.
Super duper double looper.
Okay. Yeah, like the finishing move.
Yeah, that's what Nova got hit with. And then Roadkill came in, accidentally splashed Nova. They started arguing. Meanie then held the rope for Nova to hit something resembling a suicide dive to the floor. Meanie hit the People's Leg Drop. This was the first of two incarnations of the People's Elbow. I guess that was the hot move in the fall of 98 that we had to mimic on every show. Funk then is at ringside and puts himself through a table. It doesn't break at first, so he jumps up and ass crashes through this table. I didn't know what was happening here to this man.
No, I don't know.
His spinal column was probably ringing. Roadkill then hits a splash off the top to Nova. They go back to the top. He scales the top rope, misses with an elbow drop called the Amish Bomb. Doring then hit, I just love these names. Doring hits the G-Spot Suite. And then Doring with the Sledge-O-Matic. Styles predicts that move is going to show up on a Monday night show in the future. And the finish sees...
It was the Unprettier.
The Unprettier, yeah. Yes, which
Christian?
Oh, which had already no, that was the next match with Tommy Rogers, who had the
you're right,
the Tamikaze. Sorry.
Yeah,
finish sees a tornado DDT delivered to Roadkill, and then the blue light special to Doring, which is like a wheelbarrow into a DDT, which Nova hits, and then Meanie pins Doring. 10:55. I mean, just a lot of just wacky spots at varying levels of precision. And Terry Funk acting like a madman on the floor. And this was about as indicative a match as you could use to describe what we were in store for tonight.
Yeah, I mean, typically I'm a lot really forgiving about, you know, something when you see a crowd really react to it. And certainly this crowd, you know, like any ECW crowd at this time, were very hot for everything on these shows. But I just couldn't get into a lot of these matches, starting with this one, because... there's just so much going on at any given time, and I couldn't even really get a good sense of the in-ring here because of all, you know, camera kept cutting away to Terry Funk.
Just like unnecessary distractions too. I mean,
and not like things that were very well timed or things that kept your focus as a viewer, you know, it's like look here and then look here at the same time. So first of many matches.
So Funk then attacks them with broken pieces of the table, refers to them as pieces of shit, and then Funk is freaking out. Paul Heyman comes out, is begging him to stop, and Funk double leg takedowns a security guard. Next match, we had Tracy Smothers, part of the FBI, along with Little Guido, Tommy Rich, and Ulf Herman, taking on Tommy Rogers, formerly of the Fantastics, accompanied by Chris Chetty, the cousin of Taz, who would go on to be forgotten. One of the graduates of the House of Hardcore, and they thought it would be a big star in ECW. Didn't really go anywhere after ECW folded. Rogers comes out and just cuts like this babyface promo and says, it doesn't matter what the New Orleans Saints record is. He's still going to kick Tracy Smothers' ass. This was after Tracy Smothers cut a heel promo on the New Orleans Saints.
Okay.
Just a riot about to erupt here. Mm. Tommy Rogers was also working as an agent backstage for ECW at this time. Rogers comes off the top with his missile dropkick, sends Smothers to the floor with a clothesline. Ulf Herman uses a slingshot clothesline behind the referee's back, and then Chetty goes after Herman. Rich then is distracting the referee. They double-team Rogers. Rich is mocking the crowd. And then Rogers makes his comeback, hits a knee lift, knocks Rich and Guido off the apron. Smothers uses a reverse cross off the top, a few near falls by Smothers, and then Guido is on the apron with the flag. Smothers is thrown at him, but he avoids running into Guido, turns around, and takes the Tamikaze, which is identified by Joey Styles as one of the most imitated moves in wrestling, which, as Way mentioned, Christian had just started using in the WWF. He had just been brought up the prior month. And Rogers wins this match at 7:52 after the somewhat distraction from Little Guido on the apron. Yes. Smothers then shoves Guido. They're arguing.
No, sorry. I mean, I was just trying to remember even. I watched this last week, but I thought it was these two are actually pretty smooth together. I was actually impressed with Tracy.
Two
Smothers.
Veterans that are a contrast to what you typically get in ECW. I've always enjoyed Tracy Smothers quite a lot.
Yeah.
So afterwards, Smothers and Guido are arguing, and they're explaining Tommy Rich and his Italian temper as the fake Italian here. He goes to punch Guido, but it was a ploy to sucker punch Rogers, and they beat him down. Chetty then hits a springboard clothesline to Guido and Smothers, starts going after Tommy Rich, and then there is a springboard moonsault, and Rogers just counts three here.
Why? Was there a match?
No, wasn't an actual match. He just counted three. Maybe just mind games. So who should come out at this point? Just random as all fuck? Nelson Frazier, Mabel, comes out wearing this gigantic body with a very tiny FBI shirt trying to cover any of it. And he is out. This just shows you, like, if you had any bit of a name in the mid-90s, you would get used by one of the big three companies in 1998. I think Mabel was still under a deal to the WWF at the time, and they just had nothing for this guy. And this would be his one and only appearance in ECW, and then a few months later, he would be rechristened as Viscera.
So what was that about? Is this some exchange?
I think this was just, you know, they sent Mabel his way, some surprise on the pay-per-view, but it went nowhere. So maybe they did have plans, and then WWF wanted him back right away. I'm not quite sure what the story was.
Who else in the past was part of that exchange? Like, who else had kind of
tried? Oh, there were a lot. That guy Bracus, he had come down. There was, of course, Al Snow, who was under a deal with them. Justin Credible was let go, I believe, and then picked up in ECW, but there were a lot of guys when the WWF, they didn't have their developmental systems in place. They kind of used ECW as that to develop guys and hopefully reap the rewards at some time.
Odd, though, that, I guess not odd, you know. Like, do you think they requested Mabel or did they just give him Mabel?
I'm sure they were, beggars weren't choosers. Right. And if they were willing to use Mabel, which I guess was the role that Sally Graziano would take as just a gigantic member of the FBI. Maybe that it would have been Big Sol E. Mabel. Mabel. I don't have anything. So Mabel is out. Herman attacks Chetty and Rogers, and then Herman hits the Muscle Buster, which is at that point called the Tower of Doom. And then they place Chetty on a table. Spike Dudley runs out for the save. This was one thing watching the network version of how much the music is missed on the network version, where they've just got these crappy production themes to try to emulate ECW and the real songs, which, fuck, WCW used to do this, and TNA did it too. It sounds so lame when you try to replicate the more popular song. There's nothing more low-rent to me than that.
There are instances in WCW where you grow to love it, though. You know, like, DDP is not the same without coming out to the Nirvana ripoff. You know what I mean?
I mean more in cases where they've taken a WWE guy.
Oh, okay.
Like TNA, they did that with Christian, and they've done it with other guys where
that's true.
It's just we're going to try and replicate the song you have in your mind.
But this network thing, I mean, you know,
they have to do it.
They have to do it.
There's no.
They really can't invest that much time and effort it
would be
into it.
A waste of money.
For a few seconds of a clip.
I agree. There's nothing you can do.
I am, like, impressed, though, at, you know, the amount of editing that gets done and just the convenience of having so many of their original announcers on these tapes actually on the payroll where, you know, you can get Howard Finkel if you needed to revoice anything you want. And here, obvious cutaways, obvious dubs of Joey Styles recording a lot of his calls over top of the new music.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's been a reason why. Just this week, they have updated the Hardcore TV on the network, but it is, like, way behind on stuff. And I wonder you would imagine,
I'm sure
all the libraries, ECW must require the most work
to
fix up.
Mm-hmm.
So Spike is out. He puts a table down. Mabel splashes through the table, missing Spike. It hits the acid drop to Herman. Then there's a low blow to Mabel. Hits the acid drop to Mabel on top of Herman and sits on both for another three count by the referee. So you saw, like, three matches.
Like, these matches had really no beginnings. It was just anytime somebody was covering somebody else, let's just count.
Hey, if you were in a street fight way and you wanted to send the guy a message, you'd get someone to count three.
Count for three.
On the
right.
Cement.
I beat you. I will say, you know, I really liked watching Spike here. I thought the booking of him coming out to destroy the biggest guy on the show, Mabel, was really fun. And I think also it just shows you how different of a character Spike Dudley was in ECW versus, you know, the guy who dates Molly Holly.
I like that storyline in WWE. I thought
Spike
got a lot more out of his WWE run than I thought he would get. I thought he would be lost in that company.
But this guy would have done way better, I thought.
Sure. He should have had the acid drop and, and just have a drugged out LSD. Mm-hmm. Little Spike Dudley. So Axel Rotten, Balls Mahoney, and Masato Tanaka are in the back. A black and white promo here.
Hey, I just realized. Molly Holly.
Oh, my God. way ahead of its time.
Be a drug.
LSD
druggy,
and Molly.
Druggy couple.
God, that would have been great.
Yeah.
So these guys had been attacked by the Dudleys with Balls Mahoney suffering from a compressed vertebrae and a fractured skull. Was it Mahoney who had the fractured skull or Axel Rotten? I think maybe it was Rotten who was hurt because they explained he's not medically cleared.
After the match that these guys would have on the show, I'm surprised. I'd assume all three.
Maybe they all did.
Skull fractures.
Dudleys, you have succeeded. Look at us standing before you, broken men, beaten down, in the basement of the Coliseum, not even dressing with everybody else. Why? Because we're ashamed. We're embarrassed. You did it, Dudleys. Compressed vertebrae, fractured skull. Tanaka and Mahoney are not even near ready to wrestle tonight, live on pay-per-view. The Louisiana State Athletic Commission says if the Dudleys even pick up a chair, they're stopping the match because these two guys aren't ready to go. But you know what? We may not be ready to go, but we have something inside. It's called heart. Axel Rotten has had heart in ECW since day one. We're talking barbed wire, thumbtacks, broken glass. It doesn't matter. Dudleys, you're not going to stop us. You're not going to stop this man. A fractured skull, compressed vertebrae is nothing to Balls Mahoney. Masato Tanaka, the toughest athlete to ever come out of Japan. Look at this man's face. You think a couple chairs are going to keep him down? Tonight, live on pay-per-view, November to remember, Dudleys, we're going to take you from pillar to post, from top to bottom, from ringside to cheap seats. We're going to beat you like your parents should have. Dudleys, these two guys don't care about winning belts. They don't care about getting their hand raised. They care about giving you a receipt. And you stupid bastards are going to get it tonight, live on pay-per-view. Axel Rotten's making a guarantee. Balls Mahoney, Masato Tanaka, we're going to beat your ass all over this Coliseum, live on pay-per-view.
This was just the ultimate pro wrestling promo from Axel Rotten. Just yelling, we're going to kill you. Blah, 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 wrestling, pay-per-view, now, order.
I watched this last night, and I was, like, half asleep by the time I got to this point. So I'm, like, already kind of dozing off, and all of a sudden, this man is just, like,
yelling at you,
screaming at me, and I just felt, like, so upset, you know? Like it was like my parents were yelling at each other. Like, it was like waking up to that discomfort of a man agitated and yelling, and it was... Axel Rotten talking about a pay-per-view
and tuning in to watch this tag match. Now, our next match was a fucking mess. I have to say, based on what I was hoping for and what I got, this might be the worst match on the show. Lance Storm against Jerry Lynn sounds great. Unfortunately, we had about 80 other things going on during this match, not the least of which was Tammy Sitch's thong. We had not one, two special referees in this match. Because one just isn't enough.
And was there a regular referee too?
No, I think it was just the two. We had Tammy Sitch in the ring, Mikey Whipwreck on the floor, and then Lance had Tammy Lynn Bitch, which was Dawn Marie, in his corner.
Yeah.
Just a mess here. It's just a fucking mess.
It's very amusing to hear grown men say Tammy Lynn Bitch. Like,
that was her name.
Like, we're about to... yeah.
We had three Lynns in this match.
Oh, wow. Jerry Lynn Bitch.
Jerry Lynn Bitch. So, the show...
It was also really... Sorry, before you go on. It was just like... The storyline, obviously, was between the Tammy Lynns.
The Sitch Bitch feud.
Yeah, the Sitch Bitch feud. And, Whipwreck versus Lance Storm. And then all of a sudden, like...
but we have a match completely different from those combinations.
There's all this shit going on, like, all the stripping, you know, happening here. And meanwhile, we have Jerry Lynn, who's about as ignored as can be.
This is probably the only match of Jerry Lynn's career that started off with chance of show your tits. It was a very fast pace at the start. Both were You know, I almost felt depressed here because, like, they actually were going out there to try and have a great wrestling match, and they were just fighting against the tide here. There was no point here. I commend them for trying to have a great match, and if you throw out all the distractions, this would have been the best match on the show. But it was almost depressing to me to watch them try to have a good match, knowing there wasn't a chance this crowd was going to care.
Well, the match starts off with Tammy Lynn Sitch's entrance, and she spends about, you know, 2 minutes taking off her shoes and putting on her referee boots, like seated on the apron so the camera could catch a brief upskirt. And so that kind of set the tone for this technical wrestling match.
For the entire match, the crowd would just pop when Tammy would go down to count, and they could see up her skirt.
Yep.
So that would be the reactions of the match, juxtaposed with a wrestling match in between the thong shots. That is what we got here. There was an exchange of chops in the corner, baseball slide into a head scissors by Jerry Lynn, and then a somersault dive off the apron to Lance on the floor. I was like, Jerry, save these. Save these for a crowd that gives a shit. At one point, Whipwreck came in and lifted up Tammy's skirt, and this resulted in Mikey chants from the crowd. Tammy is constantly threatening to disqualify Lance, so she's the babyface that's playing the heel referee, if you want to accept it as that, because she's trying to screw Lance, figuratively, in the match by fast counting Lance and trying to get Jerry to beat Lance.
So she's a babyface.
So she's a biased referee.
Okay. All right.
You got that? You need a chart to keep track of this. Then there was a super kick by Lance. So Tammy would do...
So basically you have the babyface who wants to cheat.
Essentially. You have the crooked babyface ref.
All right. Makes perfect sense.
Tammy would do the painfully slow count. There's nothing I hate more than this gimmick in wrestling with the evil referee. After a bridge by Lynn...
Evil good referee.
Yeah. The evil good referee. After a bridge by Lynn, he hits a pedigree, only gets a two count in ECW. Storm then is seated on the top, gets drop-kicked to the floor. There's a cross body off the top to the floor by Lynn. Then Lynn gets crotched on the top, takes a belly-to-belly off the Storm by Lance, and then Tammy is counting. When Tammy Lynn Bitch stops to count, catfight ensues, and it ends with Tammy Lynn Sitch stripping Tammy Lynn Bitch down to her bra and thong. And she was just laid out here. Whipwreck then shoves Tammy and hits a whippersnapper to Bitch, then gives another one to Lynn. Lance then low blows Mikey Whipwreck, who thinks it was Tammy Lynn Sitch who low blowed him.
I'm so fucking lost. I can't even piece together what I...
It gets better. Then we got a Tammy Lynn Sitch hit a whippersnapper to Lance. Mikey Whipwreck comes back, attacks Tammy Lynn Sitch with the whippersnapper when it was actually Lance, and then reverses the small package, puts Lance on top, and fast counts for the win. So he has just assisted the guy who hit him with a low blow. I think there were about 85 different combinations of feuds coming out of this match involving all of these people.
Talk about a slow count! Lance Storm may have had this match up one after the whippersnapper delivered to Jerry Lynn by Mikey Whipwreck. Whipwreck thought it was Tammy Lynn Sitch who nailed him in the groin because Lance Storm had the dress of Tammy Lynn Bitch in his hands. And when Mikey Whipwreck views this videotape tomorrow morning, he is going to hate himself for what he just did.
This was a mess.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a... I can't say I enjoyed it. I really didn't. I feel, though, maybe this is the type of thing that would you really enjoy watching... If you were just completely drunk. Like, I felt like...
I don't know if that's true.
Well, what I mean is I felt like much of this show was booked just based on spots and not storyline, even. Like, it's just like... It just felt like so often you're just kind of killing time until the next big spot or cat fight or big dive off at the thing. And everything in between just didn't necessarily have to... I don't know, flow together very well. And this match just, I'm sure it was a good match, but there's just so much going on around it.
I would not say it was a good match.
Well, anyway, and the mess of the ending just kind of really took me out of it.
So Styles is now with Terry Funk in the pack, who talks about Tommy Dreamer, who he corrects and says Dreamer, just cuts a lunatic promo, apologizes for his middle fingers as he holds them up, and wants to apologize to Joey Styles, Paul Heyman, and the people of the United States for making an ass of himself. He is leaving the building, and the hardcore legend is going home forever. Styles wants to take time to say how much he despises the Dudleys, but says tonight the challengers have little chance in this match because of their health. They have no chance, is what Joey Styles is telling us. Then we got this weird highlight reel, this musical montage for Just Incredible with some instrumental and this trance track. And we went from this slow fade from Just Incredible to Tommy Dreamer.
Ooh.
Very dramatic.
Special effects. Who was the editor? Do you know?
Maybe Just Incredible. Yeah, I don't know.
He cut this himself on Avid.
Then we had Joel Gertner bring the Dudleys out. And this included Sign Guy and Big Dick Dudley. Bubba cuts a promo about being the four-time champions and that they are the most skilled and scientific wrestlers in the world, and no one is man enough to take the titles from them. Gertner then does his opening promo.
Well, well, well. While Mark McGwire wouldn't have been satisfied with anything less than 70, I'm always happy to be stuck at 69. It is I, hotter than Tabasco sauce, but loads easier to swallow. The quintessential stud muffin, a good God, damn handsome man, and the man who's got more game than Parker Brothers. Joel, I'm young, I'm hung, and I'm skilled with my tongue, Gertner.
Uh-huh.
That's like a Wei Ting High School line.
That's right. I mean, do you think it's more so the fact that we're 30 now, or is it the fact that just in 2014, this just sounds so lame?
I thought Gertner is still amusing.
Oh, man. Jesus. Like, I guess I could understand in, like, 1998 this being cutting edge, but I'm even questioning that, because I'm sure at this time all this stuff was already being appropriated by the WWE.
There was, I think, more leeway typically with ECW. I wouldn't expect that you would hear this kind of, you would. That's not true. Val Venus cut some pretty similar promos. But you know what? You're cutting these promos for 1998 audiences. You know what I mean?
Apparently, and a bunch of 13-year-olds, I guess.
Well, people enjoyed Mr. Gertner at this time in his career. The Dudley boys take on an injured Balls Mahoney and Masato Tanaka for the tag titles. Axel Rotten in the corner of the challengers, but due to his liver and kidney problems, he has not been cleared. Rotten notes how the Athletic Commission won't allow chair shots, but ECW doesn't listen to commissioners or doctors, calls the Dudleys punk-ass bitches, three fat pussies, and that New Orleans is about getting drunk and getting into a fight, and declares the chairs are legal. From the head of the Athletic State Commission, Axel Rotten.
Yeah.
Dudley's got a ton of heat at the start, working over Tanaka. They played up the fact that the babyfaces are working with head trauma. Sign Guy had a sign that read, Devon stained Monica's dress, as a timestamp on this particular pay-per-view, mm-hmm. to the fall of 98. Then we got the second people's elbow knockoff, this time by Devon, but missed a diving headbutt at the end. Mahoney is tagged in, hit a splash off the top. Then Tanaka's in, hit these three spinning elbows to Bubba, and nailed Jim Molyneux by mistake. This leads to a big dick driver. These fucking names. To Tanaka. Rotten attacks him with chair shots as they're just hitting each other in the head.
Could you imagine, like, Brian Williams recapping an ECW match?
Balls Mahoney then came in with the Nutcracker Suite. Then there was a shot to the head by Gertner. Balls misses with his own chair shot. Then all four are in the ring with chairs, just hitting each other in the head. None of them will go down. The babyfaces take about 3 chair shots each before finally going down. They get back up with roaring elbows into the chairs. Then referee Jeff Jones, of Ring of Honor fame nowadays, runs in, but he won't count 3 and explains to Masato Tanaka that he cannot speak Japanese, and he pulls out his translation book to try and communicate with Masato.
Of course.
Axel then takes a chair shot to the head. To Jeff Jones.
The referee takes Jeff Jones chair shot to the head.
Takes the chair shot.
You know, they're just giving those out, you know. They don't hurt in 1998.
But it would hurt a few years later for all of these guys. Big Dick pulls down the rope and Mahoney goes to the floor. Tanaka kicks out of the 3D. Mm-hmm. So for all you people that look at the Motor City Machine Guns and that storyline of being the only team never kick out of the 3D, don't forget November of 98. Then Bubba and Devon argue. They shove each other, the predating the get the table spot, as they shove one another back and forth.
This was a lot more than just, you know, shoving each other to get the tables. They were saying, fuck you. And, you know,
they were angry. Brothers fight. The Dudleys end up hitting low blows. Devon hits a pile driver to Mahoney on top of a chair. Bubba then hits a powerbomb to Tanaka. Devon struggles to get the timekeeper's table into the ring because it's wrapped up with a cord attached to a monitor.
And the ring bell.
I thought something was going to go off the air here. They set up the tables. RVD and Sabu run down, help the babyfaces, attack them with chairs. There's a big pop. There's a leg drop frog splash combination off the top, putting the Dudleys through the tables. And Tanaka and Mahoney get the double pin in 15 minutes, and they win the tag titles. The most unlikely win from the guys that Joey Styles counted out win the tag titles from the Dudleys.
Oh, wow.
No one saw it coming.
I found it just maybe too chaotic, but I it must be the style. It must be, you know, what was appealing at the time. Like, imagine just booking the match and then looking at it on a piece of paper. Oh, such and such wins by this wrestling move. And they probably saw it, and they just said, "That's going to be boring. That's not enough. We got to throw in a run in here. Maybe if
can't have matches without run ins, like tables,
30 chair shots,
the timekeeper's bell."
Yeah, I thought this was a pretty good match to kind of show the opinion of chair shots for the time. They were just giving them out.
No, they were candy. Like candy. Triple Threat is in the back. Shane Douglas, Bam Bam Bigelow, Chris Candido, and Francine. Guess who would pop up on Nitro about 15 days after this?
Bam Bam.
Bam Bam. This would be his final ECW pay-per-view.
He didn't seem into whatever he was doing.
He had written himself out at this point.
Yeah.
Mentally. Douglas calls the people marks, says Taz has a big ego. Says they are friends, unlike RVD, Sabu, and Taz, who all hate one another. This whole time, Francine has her back to the camera, topless, turns around covering her boobs with the ECW championship, and Shane leans over and kisses the belt.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You know, it was kind of sad to hear Shane Douglas talk about, you know, being friends with these guys even 20 years from now, standing next to Chris Candido and Bam Bam.
Yeah, both men who have passed away.
I mean, just shortly after, not even that long after this.
Candido was 05, Bigelow 07. So, yeah, within sadly, a lot of these cards at this particular time, there's quite a lot of casualties. Justin Credible and Jack Victory, with his head taped up, come out, along with Nicole Bass, who was actually described as a she-male by Joey Styles, along with their other members of their group, Jason, Mr. Wright, and Chastity. And they enter the ring, and we have Justin Credible and Jack Victory taking on Tommy Dreamer and his surprise partner, Jake the Snake Roberts, who comes out as the big surprise, all decked out, wearing a rugby shirt and sweatpants.
Uh-huh.
Holy shit. I will never complain about a world champion wearing jeans again after seeing this dude and his ECW attire.
See, I don't know if I would have wanted Jake in.
That's
true.
I guess he couldn't work in tights.
Not at this point. This is before the DDP yoga.
This guy looked like death.
Yeah.
He looks better today than he did in 98.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. This was like, you know, right, like not long before Heroes of Wrestling.
this would have been actually right around the time they might have just wrapped up finishing Beyond the Mat. Well, they were in the midst of filming Beyond the Mat.
Oh, wow.
The big Royal Rumble was coming up 2 months later. Dreamer runs the ropes as Jason and Mr. Wright miss the trip, so Dreamer has to walk back to attack them. They get the heat on Dreamer. Styles notes how Credible recently tried to, quote, cane Tommy Dreamer to death at the ECW arena. There's a drop toehold that sends Dreamer into a chair in the ring. Credible then baseball slides into the post, crotching himself. Chastity comes into the ring. Jake stomps her in the midsection. Then somehow during this, Jack Victory just disappears from the apron and is replaced by Jason. So I don't know if there was maybe demolition rules here. And is suddenly tagged into the match. So there's a DDT chant. One-arm clotheslines by Dreamer and Roberts, who then calls for the DDT. Then in run Rod Price and the One-Man Gang, as we had an impromptu WrestleMania 4 reunion here with Jake and OMG. He runs in. They attack the babyfaces. There's a New Jack chant. One-Man Gang hits the 747 splash to Roberts and Dreamer. Some variation of New Jack's music then played on the WWE Network. He came out with John Cronus and a shopping cart full of weapons. At one point, Jake is just laying on the apron with a dead Jack Victory, and he's just holding his head, holding Jack Victory's head, as I think he just waited for all this to end. Cronus hit a 450 onto Credible. The referee goes to count this. Think about that. John Cronus.
Yeah, why was he counting the match for Cronus?
I was lost at this point. There was no rhyme or reason to any of the structural rulings of an ECW match. Dreamer hits a splash off the top. Credible kicks out. As the music ends, the match now continues. Maybe while the music is on, it's like musical chairs where anyone's allowed to pin anybody. But once the music ends, that's like midnight strikes. Dreamer hits a DVD. The Spicoli driver, Mr. Wright, then flips into the ring, lands on Credible, and gets punched out by Jake. Chastity comes in, and Dreamer goes to pile driver while holding his nose. Nicole Bass comes in, is hit by Jake with a low blow as Styles yells, right in the nuts, and then hits Nicole Bass with a DDT. Credible hits a low blow with a cane to Jake. A ladder pops up into the ring. Credible takes a rocket launcher off the top onto the ladder. Jake hits a DDT to Credible onto the ladder. And both Dreamer and Jake get on top of Credible, pin him, celebrate. And Jake looks like this pay-per-view a wreck.
Oh, man.
My head was spinning after this match.
Yeah,
this wasn't my cup of tea.
I couldn't get into this because I was just so lost and... Eventually, I just got bored because I was just so checked out, you know. I'll also say I'm only watching the pay-per-view, so I really am not invested at all in these storylines. Maybe you'd have a different experience if
The young, brash heel trying to knock off the sympathetic babyface Tommy Dreamer. That's the feud, and I think you could understand the story I don't think TV would have added much context to this
Okay, perhaps. But I'm just saying, like, all these run-ins... You know, I didn't understand the significance of why One Man Gang and what was the other guy?
Rod Price.
Whatever. Like, why any of these guys ran in, I don't know. I think New Jack, him coming in is always a bit of a spectacle, but I think he should be one of the only people that kind of get away with this stuff, you know? The music is a lot of fun, but then he's like, on this show, he's one of 15 run-ins.
Terry Funk returns forever. This was a true Terry Funk, I'm leaving forever, broken promise. Back in the same show. He comes out to congratulate Dreamer, asks why he picked Jake Roberts. The best part of this was Jake just like, fuck you two, and walked off to the back to get his payday and never return. Funk says Dreamer used him. And Dreamer says, I fucking love you. And Terry says, you're an asshole. Dreamer and Funk, they go back and forth. Dreamer says, I will turn my back to you, but I will never hit you. No one cared about this. Styles is explaining how Terry left ECW for the WWF, then wanted an easier schedule, left the WWF to make a movie, and that's why Dreamer never called him. Call me crazy, I could not sympathize about this. So Dreamer is left laying on the ramp after Terry beats the shit out of him.
So is Funk, like, was he the heel or what? Like,
Terry was the heel, and the idea was they were going to build to the eventual match with Terry Funk and Tommy Dreamer. But that would never happen. Terry would leave ECW shortly thereafter, and then he would pop up again in WCW in early 2000. So they would never get to the match, but there at least was a rhyme and a reason to this. And the idea Tommy would never fight his teacher, and that was the match they were going to build to.
I see.
RVD, Sabu, and Alfonso were in the back. Sabu's wearing a neck brace, pretty much playing off, you know, Van Damme taking subtle digs at Sabu. He's the better guy. Then we go to Taz with a Taz promo. Says he hates Sabu, doesn't care for Van Damme. He is using them tonight to help him get to Douglas and choke him out. And this is why Taz is the FTW champion.
I like Taz's promo. You know, as this version of Taz, he just seems so much more cooler and intimidating.
What a contrast to the Taz most would
yep.
familiarize themselves mm-hmm. with. So it's time for our main event, the triple threat against the new triple threat, as they were dubbed.
In a triple threat.
Douglas is out, cuts a promo, calling Taz a bitch, buries Van Damme for holding a trinket that he threw away and didn't want. In reference to the television title, states there is only one triple threat, and he goes through introducing all of them here. So Douglas, Bigelow, Candido against Taz, Sabu, and Van Damme. Early on, the Dudleys attack Van Damme and Sabu for revenge from earlier in the night in the tag title match, beat them down in the ring. The lights go out with Taz making his entrance and suplexing the Dudleys all over the place and clearing them out of the match.
I just love watching him throw suplexes. They're just beautiful.
This was one of the best handled characters ECW ever had, maybe the best.
And he just does them so well. Like, he, you know, for all the criticisms I think WWE could have about, or even anybody could have about him being too small, he's actually the perfect size to get underneath you and throw you like that. So it is just fun to watch.
That guy had hips that were made for judo.
Yeah.
So suplexes them all over the place. Sabu is taped up. Just looks like terrible here. His neck, his shoulder.
Dude, the guy's wrestling with a neck brace.
Got to work with.
What commission?
Got to get that payday. Well, clearly this commission doesn't care. They had banned chair shots, and ECW said, fuck it. They double-team Sabu, working over the neck. It's just a brawl all over the place with these six. Sabu hits a springboard from the chair off the top to splash Douglas and Candido. That's followed by RVD hitting a cross body off the top to the floor. They pile-drive Sabu, triple threats in control. Turns into more of a traditional tag, which was almost jarring on this show to see, with the heat on Sabu. Tries to make a tag to Van Damme, but it's not seen. The crowd then starts...
Think about that for a second. Anybody in the back can run in to attack any of the participants in this match and pin them, but this ref is upset that he couldn't see this tag.
he was giving him the five count to get back. The crowd then went back to their favorite chant of show your tits, which was probably directed at Francine or Bigelow. Van Damme comes in with some spots. Taz tags himself in. Everyone goes to the floor, leaving Douglas with his back to Taz, and Taz finally gets his hands on Douglas. This is the big confrontation they were teasing all night long. And meanwhile, these two, like, all the focus is on these two. As Taz finally gets his hands on him, so Van Damme decides this is the most opportune time to just dive off the top into the crowd. So you had to, like, pan the camera over, away from, like, the focal point.
Yeah.
Like, just... no thought to some of this shit.
It's just everybody wanting to get their own shit in. And
this was totally the embodiment of that.
Yeah. And honestly, a lot of it was very sloppy, especially from Van Damme and Sabu.
Douglas then leaps out of the corner into the Taz mission, but Sabu breaks it with the Arabian Facebuster and lands on Taz, and then Sabu pins Douglas. So the story being Taz took out Douglas but didn't get the satisfaction of making him tap, and Sabu is going to get the credit for the win, stealing that away from Taz. They counted three. There was silence for this finish. Maybe this because, I don't know, Sabu as well, as I mentioned, Taz had tagged himself in. So Sabu wasn't even the legal man that got the pinfall here.
Oh,
but let's not let that get in the way of things. So Taz and Sabu argue with Fonzie in the middle. Styles brings up if Sabu stole his thunder or was just being a team member. Says Taz looks hotter than a Mexican lunch plate right now. And Taz is yelling to Sabu not to fuck with him. Takes his FTW title and essentially says, fuck the world and fuck this show. As he walks off to the back. Thus concluding November to Remember 1998. See you later, New Orleans. Clean up this mess after we leave.
I mean, I think we all, everybody, every wrestling fan looks back pretty fondly at ECW. That doesn't mean that they didn't have bad shows.
This was a bad show.
Yeah, this was like really bad. And I, maybe the worst ECW I've personally seen. And, you know, if there are others, please enlighten us and tell us not to watch them. Don't encourage us to watch them, because I didn't have fun watching this at all.
Yeah, and I usually look forward to some of these shows, especially this ECW era, because really I could only follow ECW through the magazine, so I was up on all the storylines and such, but I had no outlet to watch ECW at this time. It wasn't until a full year after this, in like September of 99, that we even started getting the pay-per-views, which coincided with the TV starting up here. But you had missed so much stuff in ECW, so a lot of this stuff I'm just seeing for the first time.
Mm-hmm,
so, I mean, I was looking forward to watching this show, but this was just... This is a bad show. There's no way to sugarcoat this. This is a bad show.
It just seemed like it really lacked production. I mean, it just felt like something a show where they just wanted to put so much in there.
And storylines, Pete, like November to Remember was the standout show for them typically each year. Like November to Remember was a big show for them every year. And this, like, this felt closer to a house show.
It felt really like a backyard wrestling thing where everybody just had their own idea of what they wanted to do, but nobody to just oversee everything and edit down, which is what I think a lot of this needed. And it's not like there was any good wrestling on the show either. Any good wrestling that I think was even trying to get come out was pretty much obstructed by all the overbooking. So I give this show 1 out of 10.
I'll go 2 out of 10 because I'm the positive one. That was November to Remember, 98. If you're still with us, we're now going to dive into some feedback. Are me and Wade just out to lunch? Did we miss some magic from this night in November of 98? Let us find out. We start off here with Mike from Melbourne. Gosh, what an awful show. Where to start? I watched this in 2 sittings, and already I've forgotten a great deal of what happened. Just a ridiculously overbooked show from the amount of interference, false finishes, and the terribly confusing Lance Storm-Jerry Lynn match. I.e., who were the babyfaces and heels, and what was the deal with the finish? I hate it in WWE when something really obvious happens and Michael Cole has to explain it to us like we're too stupid to realize what's going on. This was the exact opposite, and even after Joey Styles' explanation, I still couldn't make much sense of it. Everyone kicked out of everything, and there was a few instances where the heels cheated behind the referee's back, which makes no sense in a company where there are no rules. I actually forgot who the Dudleys' opponents were in the tag title match when Axel got involved thinking he was a part of it. Having your world champion in a tag match on pay-per-view has never made sense to me. If he's available, why not have him defend the belt? That I will defend because they were still building up the eventual showdown of Taz getting his hands on Shane Douglas, and I think they wanted to prolong that as long as possible. So, you can watch this show, not the most infinite depth when it comes to main event players, and that was a match they were trying to save that showdown for. But nonetheless... This was full of screw-ups, including the finish where Sabu clearly nailed Taz with the chair. I thought they were going to play up that Sabu turned on Taz and cost him the match, but apparently not. The Terry Funk stuff was annoying, and to top it all off, the crowd didn't seem to care about anything and was easily the least enthused I've seen an ECW audience. I would be interested to know what the reviews were of this show at the time it happened, because in 2014, it's bloody awful.
Jeez. All right, we go to Danny Hernandez. Says, "Ha ha, you guys got Rickrolled thinking this was a good show when you looked at the different November to Remember cards last week. The main event was such a waste of talent and wasn't well planned or well thought out. The undercard was incredibly weak, and Tammy ruined the which Tammy? Tammy ruined the only...
Multiple Tammys, multiple Lynns.
Show stealer. A travesty. Nothing of interest happened here, but I watched it on the network, so who knows what they dub over it or change.
Christian writes, my main trouble with this show was that nothing was simple. Well, that's simplifying it. Everything was overbooked. The opener was overshadowed by Terry Funk being crazy. Roger Smothers had too much endless interference. Lynn Storm had a random story, and the fans only cared about seeing Tammy's ass in that outfit. The tag title match was the typical Dudley's cluster at that time. The semi-main was insane with the amount of people involved, and Jack Victory switched places with Jason for some reason. Finally, the main event was just too clunky and never got on the same page. Also, Shane just wouldn't shut up before it started. That really dragged. Two other things.
That was another thing. It was just like, I just kept waiting for these matches to begin. And like, so much time was taken with guys doing their own introductions and then cutting these really long-winded promos.
This show was only, like, I don't know if they had cut out anything. This was only like a 2.5-hour show. And it was like they were stretching just to hit 2.5 hours, it felt like, at times. Two other things I took away from this show. The referee shirts in ECW were crazy colorful. They really stood out. I would have also loved to have been a worker around this time, as it seemed Paulie would book anyone for such a small thing. Jake Roberts didn't give a shit. Ulf Herman and Mabel were booked to job to Spike Dudley randomly. Axel Rotten just talked. Terry Funk fucked around for 3 hours. And One Man Gang just yelled and splashed. Didn't feel this show at all. Even nostalgia really helped. 3 out of 10.
Didn't really help. We got a Poff Lord from Houston who says, yo guys, well, this was a sloppy show. It seemed like there was either an odd, botched, or poorly timed move in every match. The ECW refs dressed up as the LSU golf team. The fuck-ups I really got a kick out of were Balls Mahoney taking a pile driver, then immediately looking up and scooting his body around on the mat to make space. Then he plays dead again. The other one was when Terry Funk did a leg drop on the table to break it, since it didn't break when he was thrown into it. Funk was an even bigger wreck on the mic. His promos seemed even more incoherent than usual, and his most memorable line was a reference to him committing domestic violence against his wife and daughter. The call of the night was Joel Gertner is going to die. Shane Douglas in third person is atrocious, and Tanaka has the shortest arms of any full-grown man that I've ever seen. Tammy Fitch was the best part of the show for me. Kudos to her, because it looked like she took a whippersnapper off her torso. I give this 3 Devon-stained Monica's dress signs out of 10.
David Duffenberg writes, well, this was quite the mess. ECW can pull off an overbooked match, but this was a completely overbooked show. The Terry Funk stuff was just ridiculous. The crowd was jacked to see him at first. Then he wore out his welcome immediately. Mabel running out for the FBI actually cracked me up, because I had zero idea he ever made an appearance in ECW. It's hard to even remember all that happened on this show, because there was so much of it, but none of it memorable. There was a lot of unprotected chair shots and a lot of interference. That about sums it all up. I wanted to write more, but there is anything left to say. Now I'll just be lame and call this a November to forget. I'll give it 3 out of 10, and that feels generous.
We go to Brad from Halifax. What the hell was this? Not an ECW.
Every opening to a piece of feedback is just, what did I do with my time this week?
Not an ECW that stands over time. Crazy Terry Funk losing his mind on pay-per-view was sad and a waste of time. He was right. Jake the Snake over Terry Funky is a bad idea. It felt as if this whole pay-per-view was all about building to something else down the line rather than conclusions. Yes, it is nice that one show builds to the next, but there was never enough time, except that at the end of the show, to really let anything breathe. The worst part was the Tammy stuff with Tammy 1 and Tammy 2. I hated it all so much. I wanted to cry and had to turn it off while in my garage in fear someone was going to hear it going on and call the cops, thinking I was doing something to hurt someone. Poor Lance Storm.
As they hear Terry Funk bellowing out of someone's garage about beating his family.
I also had issues. He gives it 2.5 out of 10. I also had issues with my network watching the American one online, though through some help, this happens. But for $10 a month, who cares? I have it as a Rogers. It's not in Halifax. You know, so maybe that could be it, John. Like the fact that we're watching through, IP blocker.
Perhaps. Another Brad, but from Whitby. This was the quietest ECW crowd I've ever seen, and I don't really blame them. I'll follow everyone by saying this show was overbooked, poorly presented, and a waste of good talent. I have no idea why Terry Funk was out for the first match, or even on this show altogether. Did he just show up with his ring gear and force his way onto the show? I think there was a reason for it. You were building to an eventual match. There was just a lot of him on this show. The one high point on this show was the referee shirts. They were hideous. Someone took their time to design this shirt and design it with at least two different colored versions. In my head, 1998 doesn't seem that long ago, but these shirts proved to me my perception needed to change. So to help confirm that this was 16 years ago, I searched Wikipedia events in November of 98 and found that Jesse Ventura was elected governor of Minnesota 2 days after this show. Man, I feel old now. One horribly designed shirt out of 10.
And finally, Ian from Ely, UK. Thanks to some software and reverse geo-blocking, I was able to enjoy November to Remember on the network here in the UK. This was my first ECW show, and I rather enjoyed it. We got what the legacy of ECW was. Hardcore matches mixed with a variety of strong technical wrestling.
Well, I missed the strong technical wrestling.
The first 98% of every match seemed solid, but Paulie couldn't help overbooking every finish. Consider the Lance Storm-Jerry Lynn match. You've got the babyface Lynn, who's somehow linked with the heel Tammy Lynn Sitch, who's opposing the heel duo of Storm and Dawn Marie. Joey Styles didn't know how to react, and neither did the crowd in New Orleans. The Dudley Boys match was excellent. I remember watching Tanaka steal the show at the original one-night stand that he and Balls Mahoney were brilliant in a strange Bedfellows hardcore tag match. I've never seen Bubba this heavy and found it stunning how quick he was in the ring considering.
He was listed by Styles as 350 pounds on this show, which I imagine was a bit of an exaggeration,
oh, yeah,
but probably not far off.
I could buy it.
He was exceeding 300 at one point.
But he was doing planches here.
Hey, man.
That was surprising. The main event was solid until, again, Heyman had to overbook the finish, which took a guaranteed pop and replaced it with a wet fart from Church. What advantage was there to having Sabu attack Taz just to make the cover after all? It confused me and the crowd in New Orleans. And what was with Bill Alfonso's whistle?
I'm glad you brought that up. That whistle, I was going to, like, drill my head off throughout this show.
That's every match, though.
This was the entire show because some dude in the crowd had a whistle.
Oh, okay.
And this thing was going off. I thought I was going nuts during this show with that goddamn whistle. I will take a what chant any day of the week over that fucking whistle.
Finally, I know it's a trope of pro wrestling, but still, not one man, but two managed to sneak back into the building after being escorted out by police and security. If you ever want to sneak into a building, go to New Orleans, I guess.
All right. Well, thank you, folks.
Positive feedback.
Hey, we take it all here. We are by no means the authority here when it comes to the definitive opinion of a show.
You know, I'll just tell Ian, you know, I'm glad you enjoyed this show because I wouldn't say this was a good ECW show to start off with.
Hey, if Ian enjoyed this show, he should get into some other stuff. Go check out some of their well-regarded events. His mind might explode. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's a show we'll probably never, ever again have to talk about. November to Remember, 98.
I really hope not.
A wonderful night of just carnage in New Orleans. Next week, Way, I think it'd be appropriate. We should do a Survivor Series. Are you up for a Survivor Series?
Absolutely.
Is there anyone that when I say Survivor Series jumps out at you and do not say 97? Well, we have reviewed 97 and it will never be talked about again.
Yeah. No, not really.
Then you know what I'm going to go? Well, give me an era.
Okay.
Give me an era. We have, of course, the late 80s. Yep. We have the early 90s, late 90s, the 2000s.
How about the 19? Okay, I'm going to think about a number, and then you subtract it by 8. 18, okay?
Okay.
85.
So.
And then multiple. Yeah, I don't know.
What? Just 67.
Okay, and then add 30.
97.
Oh, shit.
No, Jesus, you're terrible.
I'm just trying to come up with like a random. I'm just. Like,
okay, well, I have them up numbers here. We've done 97. We've done 96. Do you want to do 95?
Sure, why not?
We don't have to.
I don't even know what's on the card. It would make no difference to me.
I'm just looking. We have reviewed quite a few of these Survivor Series.
Let's do one from, do you think there's any interest in, like, the 2000s? Because, I mean,
what do we got here? 2000, okay, I'll quickly give you a highlight of the show, and then you can pick, okay?
All right.
2000 features a 30-foot drop in a car.
Okay.
2001, I believe we did. That's where the invasion ended. 2002 is the Elimination Chamber. I think we've reviewed that too. 03 we've done. 04 was a Survivor Series elimination match where the winning team would all get a reward.
What? That sounds stupid.
05 was like right after Eddie Guerrero died. That's what I most remember about that show.
Okay.
06?
You know you shouldn't let me choose because we're just going to end up...
I like when you choose. It's less guilt on me.
No, you shouldn't feel guilty, man. Like, just pick anything and I'll... If it's a good show, I'll enjoy it. If it's not a good show, I probably won't enjoy it.
Let's do 95 then.
Okay.
Is that fine with you?
Yeah.
As I look over these 2000s, none are jumping out at me as ones I'm dying to go watch. 90s was a fun period. It was like... And I recall it being a pretty good show.
What's on the show?
Let's look it up, and we'll get a taste. It was headlined by Diesel and Bret Hart.
Okay.
And it had a wild card match where it was babyfaces and heels.
You sure we haven't done that?
95?
Oh, we did another Diesel Bret match.
I think so. I don't think we've reviewed this one because I don't recall watching it. Oh, you know what this has? This has a women's Survivor Series match when they were working with All Japan Women.
Sweet.
I'm down with that.
Okay.
Aja Kong, Linus Suka, Kyoko Inoue.
Bertha Faye.
So there you go. Let's take a look at Survivor Series 95. I think that'll be a fun show to watch. Lots of a variety at that time in 95. So that's coming up next week, our one review of Survivor Series this year, as we get set for the U.S. Thanksgiving next week.
What?
It's Thanksgiving in the U.S. next week to coincide with Survivor Series.
That's right.
Thanksgiving Eve tradition.
Yeah. No, I'm actually looking forward to this show. We got Team Shawn Michaels taking on Team Yokozuna.
Ooh, what creative names.
And we also have the Team Dark Side.
Ooh.
The Undertaker.
Against the Team Light Side?
The Royals, actually.
Oh, the Royals.
King Mabel, ECW alum.
Oh, of course.
Jerry Lawler, Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
The Royals.
And Isaac Yankum, DD.
How is he royalty? No, I guess he was the Lawler's dentist.
There you go.
God damn. I mean...
Royal... he makes crowns.
That was one of your best jokes ever.
There you go. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay.
Good choice, John.
Okay, 1995 Survivor Series. Do you have a tune at all that you want to go out of here with?
For the CCW show?
Oh, let's find a song that perfectly encapsulates 1998 and all of its mess that was put together on this ECW show as we sign off here, folks. Go to liveaudiowrestling.com if you want to leave feedback for the 95 Survivor Series. It will be up on the Law message board this weekend, lawradio.proboards.com. Follow us at Law Radio at Way0937. You can catch all of our regular shows, and we will chat with you next week.
Very nice.
He makes crowds. Straight.
funk you! And funk you! Polly Dangerously!